session number 10012, reel 9.
Mr. George Clayton, reel 9. I'd like now to... We've been talking about the artillery fire and how it affected you. How were you affected by the machine guns and the sniping and things like that? Did that have a big impact on you?
Well, the shells, you see, they come in contact with you maybe about 9 miles before you go to the trenches. But further up, well, before you got rifle fire, you'll maybe be about... I would say about 2 miles from the trenches before you came in contact with rifle fire or machine gun fire. But there came a time when you seemed to get accustomed to it, and a lot of the shells, they didn't make a bit of difference. You heard the scream of them going over, but
What about snipers, though? You said about shells.
Oh, snipers. Well, you got them... When you got near the trenches or into the trenches, that why sometimes the German trenches would be a mile or 2 miles away from where your nearest British trench was to them, and sometimes you were only a matter of maybe a couple of 100 yards apart. That was the way the thing was. That's the way sometimes you're quite near the Germans. Another part of the line, you'll be a mile away from the Germans.
Were you very conscious of the need to keep your head down? Were you conscious you had to keep your head down when you were close?
Oh, yes, when the shell you were seeing, that's...
No, but with sniping.
Oh, yes, we were generally warned that... when you were in B4 trench, to be sure, keep your head down. But mind you, you didn't require any telling because you kept it down. And in fact, I remember one of the officers saying he had a party of men and he told them to keep down. Well, there was another officer with him. He says there's no need to tell these men to keep down. He says they keep down all right. Yes.
Did you have any miners killed through sniping?
Any miners killed through sniping? Oh, yes. Yes, another brother was wounded with a sniper. My brother was wounded with a sniper. But he was coming out. He was leaving. His time had been up in the trenches, and he was coming through. And it was where the communication trenches, they called them, you know. And there had been some... Hadn't had much cover. And they must have seen him, but he was shot through the arm. And affected him all his life. It was his right arm. The bullet went through about there. I think it
just
was
above the elbow.
Yeah. Yes, and it affected the use of his fingers, his thumb especially. You could put a lighted match on his thumb, and he couldn't feel anything. It must have destroyed some of the nerves, you know, in his arm. Do you say? Yes.
What about things like mortar fire or rifle grenades? Did you meet much of that?
Oh, yes, we've had the rifle grenades and the... What is it called? Whiz-bangs. Whiz-bangs, there was a thing, you just got a whiz, and then there was a bang. It was... But they used that for trench warfare, the whiz-bangs. And a deadly thing, too. Of course, that was usually where there was wasn't much between you. You got these whiz bangs, and I remember once. Oh, I wouldn't have been here now, but the dugout that I was lying in, it had an opening where you got into, you know, and I just had some timber that I was lying on, and I just got up, and I think I was going away to see about getting me breakfast of some kind. And when I come back here, some pieces of shell had come into where I was lying, had gone through the open doorway, and I was stuck right in the timber. If I hadn't got up at that time, I would have been severely wounded or gone altogether.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Did that sort of thing affect you?
Well, it did with some. I think there was a difference of temperaments for that. So the time came when, well, it was an everyday occurrence, and believe me, that. But it's surprising how you hit and how you missed as well. No, I was wounded out there.
No, I'll come to that, because that's later on. Well, did things like religion help at all to get you through it? Did you have any religious...
Well, I think there wasn't be many people that went out there that didn't say prayers of some kind, I'll tell you. You knew you were in that great danger that... I think there was very few people, I think, that went out there that didn't use the prayers sometimes. Yes, I would say that. Yes, I've heard people praying out there, praying to their God to help them. Yes.
Now, did you ever, with all this, did you ever also get any shell shock or anything like that amongst the miners?
Yes, that often happened, but it never happened to me. Oh, yes, we've had men shell shocked.
Did you believe in shell shock? Did you know what shell shock was, or did you think they were just lost a nerve?
It's the nerves that's gone, and they were taken out the line at the hospital, you know, if they got shell shocked. And then there was trench feet as well in winter time. A lot of people in the frosty weather were walking among water and ice, and that they got frozen feet. And some used to lose some of the tours. They went to hospital, and they were in hospital a long time before they came back, and some didn't come back. They would be discharged with frozen feet. I think they could lose some of the tours with a frost, you know, getting it frostbitten. Yes, and that happened.
Did you have any trouble with your feet?
Well, I can never say I went sick with it, but I certainly felt it in my feet.
Did you put whale oil on them?
Eh?
Were you given whale oil or anything to put on them?
We used to use them with snow. That's generally what we did with our feet, and they used to say that was a protection.
You rubbed snow into them?
Rub snow on your toes mainly. That's where you got the frostbite, and they say that helped to kill the frost if you rubbed it with snow. Yeah.
Now that was a bit of an interlude into the normal fighting that went on. Is there anything else you can remember about the underground fighting? After you, what happened after you'd been at Maple Copse?
Well, the underground fighting, that was... I can remember when there was the Germans put a charge of gas into our underground workings.
Do you remember where that was?
That was in Maple Copse.
What happened? Can you tell me the story of that? What happened?
Well, I was at the surface when what was in it there came to get out as quick as they can, but one had been too late to get out, and they went back to look for him, and he'd got almost as far as the shop bottom, but he collapsed there, and he was dead when he was brought up. A big, smart chap. I was at the top when he came up, and I thought he's one of the finest physical men I ever saw. He was dead though when we got him up. Somebody go down, but he almost got to the shaft. And it was a charge of gas. He had his respirator on. We used to put it, we always carried a respirator, but it hadn't saved him, and he collapsed.
Gas was it?
Eh?
What gas was it? Do you know?
What?
Which sort of gas was it?
Well, I can't tell you. There was a chlorine gas, and there was mustard gas. That was a deadly kind of thing. I've been among the mustard gas, and it used to make you, especially where your collar, your coat was, you know, it got in there. Bah, it used to smart. It was gas was a deadly thing. And it affected you a lot as well. But mind you, it wasn't very comfortable having to go to bed with a respirator on either. You many times used to say the respirator was as bad as the gas. You took it up and just chanced it.
How would you clear that? You know, the maple copse where when the Germans put a charge of gas through, how long did it take it before that was clear and you could use it again?
Well, there usually was a siren when the gas alert would come. There was sirens in the trenches, and there was somebody on gas alert, and his job was, if he detected gas, he had to blow the siren, and that warned all those that were in underground or in dugouts to get the respirators on. But he also gave an all clear that was meant when there was no more gas coming over.
But with this charge of gas released underground, wouldn't that stay underground for quite a while? It wouldn't be blown away, would it?
Oh, yes, it would do. Well, everybody was in the gallery. If he could, he had to get out of it. When there was a gas charge came into the underground workings.
How would the Germans do that? How would they put the gas into it?
Well, they had a boring machine, and it was fired in through a torpedo tube. There was inside the torpedo tube, there was a charge of gas there as well as the explosive. And we've lost, as I say, lost a lot of men, and we had the same thing. They would lose a lot of men by our same action, you know, because we've made an explosion, we've gone and tunneled through that debris that was all thrust in, you know, by the explosion, and we've got dead Germans out. And I remember a few times, one time in particular, I was the dugout I was in, we had a fire lamp burning. You know what a fire lamp is? Like a big barrel, you know, an iron tub of some kind. And then we used to, you've seen them, the roadman has them on what they call fire lamps when they want the lead melting or something like that. They use it for that, fire lamps. And, this fire lamp. I remember once when there was a gas charge in our main, and I knew there were some men left behind me that didn't get out, and I think it was the means of some of them that did get out, because we put the fire lamp, we carried it, we were able to carry it somewhere with it, and we put it over the shaft top, and the fire, you know, it sort of lifted the gas out, lifted all the impure air out, and I think it was the means of saving some of the lives as well, getting that fire lamp over the top of the shaft.
Were you ever in the shaft when a gas charge was blown? I presume not.
I can't say I was. I was ever under when there was a gas.
Were you lucky in that? I mean, were you lucky that you were never underground when any of these terrible things happened?
Oh, I think I was lucky the whole lot of the time. Yes, there was very few that went out with me. I would have 2.5 years, I think, out there, and there was 600 of us left Chatham when we first went out. And when I was wounded, out of those 600, there were 67 left when that went out with me. All previous to that had been...
How were most of them killed? Or what had happened to most of them? Not, they weren't all killed, of course. What happened to most of them?
Well, most of them, I would say, were shrapnel wounds. The majority of them, a lot of them, got rifle wounds as well, you know.
Were many killed on the ground?
Many killed on the ground? Yes, I would say quite a few. This underground tunneling, yes.
But more were killed through actual shrapnel?
Oh, I would say more was killed on the surface than there was on the ground, because there was both the artillery fire, and then there was the machine gun and rifle fire as well, you know, coming from the German lines.
Is that why you were able to accept the tension of being underground? Because although it was very dangerous underground, in a way it was almost less dangerous than being above ground. Is that how you were able to balance it out, or did you think what did you think about it?
I would say that the majority of people were injured and killed with shell fire. There was we've had some was gassed and badly gassed, but every man carried his respirator, which was a protection of some kind. But some were too late to getting the respirator on, or it hadn't been fitting properly.
What I mean is, although tunnel warfare was horrible and seemed horrible, in actual fact, you were probably in less danger down there than you were when you were on the surface. Is that what...
Oh, I would say that too, yes. You were shell-proof and you didn't get the rifle fire. Oh, yes, you had a jolly good protection once you were underground. Yes, it was a jolly good dugout, because sometimes you were 20 or 30 feet deep. Yeah, all that cover up the top of you, you were shell-proof, and you bomb-proof.
So it was just the German mines you had to worry about?
The German mines, what you had to worry about. When you came in contact with them, it was many times for who could get the first one on.
Did you have any sort of rescue equipment for getting people out? Because if people...
We had the Porto appliance, the Sieb Gorman Porto. We had a Porto team. They were instructed on the use of the Porto. There was classes for them to go to, you know, instruction centres.
Did you ever do any of that?
I never did that course, no.
Do you know how it worked? What was the procedure? What was the rescue procedure? What with this Porto equipment? What would they do?
Well, you had to get this Porto appliance over your head, and you had to... There was a charge of gas in it, or oxygen or something. He had a big pile of something on your back, and then this over your head and over your mouth, and you breathed oxygen. It was that's what you breathed in the Porto appliance, and they were a German manufacturer, too. The Sieb Gorman rescue appliance that we had. You used to say, you know, that a lot of our cement was exported to Holland, and the Dutchmen sold it to the Germans. And there was maybe the Germans was able to get these Porto appliances, and they would sell them to us as well, you know. It was a money-making game for them. And
were they much use in action? Were the Proto appliances ever used? Did you see them being used? Were they effective?
Oh, yes. Yes, I've known one that's been in charge. We had a Porto team. And if there's been an explosion underground, that they put a charge into us and a charge of gas, then we used to get the Porto team to go down. And yes, the brought men out and saved their lives that way. Sometimes they were too late getting them out. They would maybe be dead by the go to the shaft bottom, or they died really after. They were too late getting out, too late to get the protection of the Sieb Gorman appliance, you know.
Did you ever have to try and help dig towards where men were known to be trapped, you know, where roofs fallen in or something? Would you ever be involved, or would there ever be efforts to rescue them by digging through to them quickly? Did that ever happen in 175?
No, why I couldn't say that that brings anything to my mind, but there has been people when there was a gas explosion, they had the sense to put the respirators on and were able to get to the shaft, you know, and get to the surface in time before the snuffer. But some, I know we had one man collapsed at the shaft bottom.
You told me, yes.
Yes, yes. He was, when we got him out, he was dead, and a jolly fine physical specimen he was as well.
I mean, your father had been killed underground in the mines.
My father was killed underground in the mines.
Did that make you nervous sometimes, because you were underground here in this dangerous situation, or did you not think about it?
No, I couldn't say that affected me at all. He'd been killed, and he was killed when I was only 6 years old, I think, when he was killed. And I can remember him, but just dimly remember him. And I can remember I had an aunt lived, she had a farm near Durham, and there was a telegram came to the house that I had to come home. My father had been injured.
You told me that, yes.
Yes, but when I got home, he was dead, yes.
Now, do you remember an officer called Cowans?
Cowans, yes, yes, there was a Cowans, one of the leading officers when our company was first, there was Cowans, Lum, and...
Was Cowans a commanding... I think Cowans was a commanding officer, wasn't he?
Cowans was a commanding officer, yes, yes,
not
yes.
What was Carlisle then?
Why, Carlisle, he was another one that came on later. I don't know what happened.
Was Cowans popular? Because Cowans is quite a well-known tunnelling officer. He's quite well-known. Was he popular, or what was his manner like?
Oh, I think he was the commanding officer. And in fact, he used to... I think the officers that was under him during the morning, what the men did, he didn't seem to bother much about the men, but some of the officers didn't like the commanding officers.
He was the one you were talking about when you said that he got onto the officers more then?
Yes, well... we had good officers, I would say, on the
Did
whole.
Did any of them have nicknames?
Eh?
Did any of them have nicknames? Did you give them nicknames?
I couldn't remember what he nicknamed for them, but no.
How long were you at Maple Copse?
How long were we at Maple Copse?
Yes.
Oh, we walked there quite a while. That was to the left of Sanctuary Wood, Maple Copse. It had been occupied there by Canadian miners.
How you said that. How long were you there in this tunnelling to and fro?
I don't think we were there a great long time. But it was a jolly good place to be in, because you didn't get the shell fire. It wasn't such a hot quarter as what Hill 60 was. You used to get more shells and more rifle fire. It was a quiet sector to be in, Maple Copse. And, it was really, we used to call it a cushy at Maple Copse.
So where did you go from there?
Oh, when we left there, we went, went farther south. New Chapelle, I think it was, we went away from there. When we left there...
And that's where you were digging dugouts, is it?
Yes, yes, that's where we had some deep dugouts. That's where we went among the chalk area.
So you weren't mining there at all, counter-mining?
Oh, no, we there wasn't any mining there, I don't think.
Did you have any more mining where the... It was Maple Copse and Sanctuary Wood, that was the only place where you were mining and counter-mining with the Germans, wasn't
yes,
it?
Yes, yes, I think that's the only place I can remember. Where we went to, and then later on we went to the Somme, but when we went to the Somme, it was constructing roads. And then we came back to Ypres again, it was constructing roads again.
How would you go about constructing roads?
Well, there was a party of us. I was wounded when we were constructing roads. That was up in the Ypres salient.
What year was that?
That was in 1918.
Oh, well, the first time you were constructing roads, then what?
No, we were constructing roads in the Ypres salient, in the Somme sector.
What year was that?
That was in the winter of 1916, 1617. It was a dreadful winter. Oh my God, the ground was like metal, and dead were laid out there. Oh, till the thaw came. I don't think they were able to bury some until it came to April. It was a long winter, and even you could get a handful of snow and put it into one of them empty cups and tins, you know. We used to get tins of cups and that 60 cigarettes was just about it, like a milk tin. And you could warm your snow in there to get water underneath a candle. Then you had some warm water when the snow melted. Have a shave. And by the time you were shaved, we used the cutthroat razors. There wasn't any safeties in them days. By the time they were shaved, the water was frozen again to ice, and you had to melt the water that you left your lather brush in before you could get it out. It was a block of ice again. I've known me have to do that more than once. Well, you had your good times as well as your bad times, you know.
What were the good times then?
Well, it was the company you had, and you could always find somebody who could see humorous sides of things, you know. And you were comrades, and I would say that an army life is different than a civilian life. I think there's more kindness shown from one to another. Where there's a regiment of soldiers in the field, you'd find more friendliness, comrades, than what you do in civilian life. Because in civilian life, I used to think when I come home, well, everybody knows that just after money.
You said that earlier. What about Estaminets? Would you ever get to visit Estaminets when you were?
Oh, yes, Estaminets, that's where they sold beer. Oh, yes, well, I used to take a glass of beer when we got there. Yes, but the beer there, it had no alcohol in it. I've known some fellas drink 20 glasses of that French beer, and they hadn't turned a hair. It was just like drinking water, but with the same colour as beer. You get it for a penny a glass.
Did you ever drink wine or anything stronger?
Oh, yes, the Vin Rouge and Vin Blanc, white wine and red wine. I used to like the red wine. They drink a lot of wine in France, and you could get a good bottle of wine for about a couple of shilling.
Would you get drunk at all then?
No, I can never say I was a heavy drinker. I have been talking a lot, I know, but I couldn't say that the drink had the best of me. No.
What else would you do for recreation when you were out of the line?
Recreation? Well, we had football. I played as a fullback. We had a football team. That's when we were out the trenches, you know. We used to get our company would B company would play A company, or A company would play B company, and we had a football ground, and that was one of the recreations. And sometimes you were able to get a hold of a bike. We had a few bikes and bicycles, and you were able to, where we were billeted at Flamartines, well, we were able to visit Popper Range with a bicycle. I remember once I got to there was a cinema show there. There wasn't the talkies, there were just the silent cinemas in them days, you know. But the King of Belgium was there. He was in a gallery. This is where it had been a sugar refinery, a factory refining sugar. And out of part of that, they had seats in it and a cinema and a screen. And there was a bit of a gallery erected, and the King of Belgium was there. So that's one thing I saw at that time. I saw the King of Belgium.